Well, we are back. It is the 170th installment. I tell you what, it'll be 200. God willing, it'll be 200 before you know it. I'm glad you joined us this week. As always, if you're new here, I always say at the beginning, in case somebody's just your first time tuning in, wonder what the name of the show is all about. It's because we do have a Christian-specific message roughly around the halfway point, very roughly, sometimes way later, sometimes a little earlier, but we do have a Christian-specific thing. Encourage you to stick around for that. It's not going to be like what you probably are used to. Like, I don't want to listen to any of that. You probably might actually get something out of it. But either way, whatever brought you here, I'm glad you're here. Wherever you found us, I'm glad you did find us. I always say at the beginning of the show, it doesn't get any better. You know, we don't have like, you know, the good content is over here, but you got to pay to listen to it. Sadly, this is as good as the content gets. It is good. I had a little self-deprecating humor there, but this is what you get. There's nothing behind a paywall or you have to pay extra for. And that's because I depend on the voluntary support of you, the listeners. We do pass an offering, a plate around, and it's easy to fill. We got snail mail. It doesn't get any easier than that. I mean, really, snail mail. Anybody can do snail mail. Back in the day, people would be like, I don't understand any of that cryptocurrency. So you have to understand it. You do snail mail. Anybody can put a letter in the mail. But people don't write letters anymore. I don't know. Anyway, we got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. Email address is down there, you know, drop your notes, whatever. It's always good to hear. Always good to hear from you. Speaking of that, we'll go quickly through the listener supporter mailbag. I actually just have two. That tells you how thin the plate can be sometimes. And the second one is going to be pushed off into the Christian specific segment. So we've only got one from the listener supporter mailbag this week. And this is from Mr. T, one of our weekly. He puts something in the plate every week. Very much appreciated. GPD prayers are always with you and yours. God bless. Question. Why do you think the Gospels mention nothing about Jesus' childhood and early life? We know he was an apprentice carpenter, but little else. Granted, not knowing changes not my faith. Just curious as to what you think. Well, when you think about it, and we're not getting off into the... You see, if I put this in the Christian-specific segment, I would have had nothing. I would add nothing. Y'all like, why didn't you put that in there too? I don't want to hear any of this Jesus stuff. It won't take long to answer. And if I did that, then I'd have no listener supporter mailbag. I have to have an excuse. I got to have something. Got to have some listener supporter mailbag. Well, it's great. When you understand that the Gospels themselves are actually very much a condensed version. I mean, you think about, you know, the disciples hanging out with Jesus all of these hours and all of these days over and over. We're given just a snapshot of the bare basics of what we need to know. One of the things I'd love to hear, like if you could, I don't know, you know, if you could, wouldn't it be amazing? Like when Jesus goes off with his dudes, you know, like they leave the crowds and they get in a boat and they go over to this other shore and they go up in the hills and it's just them. Him and his 12 dudes, they're camping around and they're just visiting. I would love to listen to those visits. Now, we're not told what was discussed in those visits. You know, I mean, Jesus, it's referenced in places where Jesus says, you know, I've explained everything to you, but we don't get that conversation. We didn't get all that. We got the abridged version. We got just the quick version of what we need to know. So there's a whole lot we don't know. I'd love to know what Jesus was discussing with his disciples when it was just them hanging out, you know, or just irrelevant. You know, everybody has this impression like Jesus sat around and only talked about this. I would imagine they also sat around after having supper, you know, and they were just visiting. They were probably having some jokes, you know, and talking about different things they saw and laughing about things and experiencing things and their experiences. I think it was probably really, really, really cool. But no, we don't get that because it's largely not relevant to us. But understand that what we're given in the gospel is just a very small snapshot of Jesus' life. And as you yourself pointed out, at the end of the day, what we are given is what we are needed, is what we need to secure our faith and really live our lives and move forward and start learning as Christian believers. So anyway, like I said, short listener supporter mailbag this week. And unless I do have one more, but I did push it into the Christian specific segment. So yeah, you want to hear the next one, you got to stay around for that. So, yeah, I mean, as we keep on trucking along down the rails, you know, you're in the club car of the Clown World Express. You know, we're all just sitting here, this runaway train. We're just on the runaway train, just seeing what other sort of tomfoolery is gonna come our way next. Amazing me when people, you know, be like, you know, well, the government surely wouldn't. And you could just insert what the next lie is here. It's amazing we're lied to so much. And yet there are people who are still like, well, they wouldn't lie about that. Why wouldn't they? Pretty much there's nothing left that they haven't lied to us about. And we're at the point now that the lies aren't even convincing lies. You know, I'm old enough. I remember back when at least, you know, you look back and now, you know, well, they were bullshitting us on that. But you look back and if you were there at the time, you understood in the context of things that it was at least somewhat believable. Now they're just shoveling it on us. They're just shoveling the BS on us. But they wouldn't lie about that. The big lie. It's like the vast majority of people have never read Mein Kampf. So whenever somebody spouts off, you know, Hitler's big lie, they act like Hitler was telling on himself. You know, they were telling on themselves. This is what we do. This is our evil plan. But if he actually really understands that he was saying that was what the Jews do, was relevant for us, is this is what the government does. The government tells us the big lie, and people deny because it's such a big lie. They can't be lying about that. It's too huge. When you ask people, you say, well, why wouldn't the government lie about that? I mean, why would they not lie about it? Well, because they could get caught. How would they get caught? Do you not notice that the media and the government walk lockstep with one another? There is no media to say. People are always like, well, I remember I've seen this argument that, well, because there would be some reporter out there who wants to be the next Pulitzer Prize winner. Trust me, you ain't getting a Pulitzer Prize for contradicting the narrative of the regime. That ain't how it works. And even if there was some reporter out there, there isn't. Trust me, the old idea of, you know, actual journalists that used to exist, those don't exist anymore. Those people you see on like libs of TikTok videos, you know, like these screeching liberals, those are your journalists. It's just, you've got people with journalism. You don't have like gumshoe reporters with a hat and their pen and they're going out to get the scoop. You don't have that anymore. You've got those journalism majors that you see screeching, the mutant people that you don't even know where they came from. That's the reporters. They sit around at their desk and check their email for the latest press release from the State Department. And that's their big news story. They don't even know how to do journalism. And this is why it's so important to have a free press, which we don't. This is what a not free press looks like. Again, big lie. They tell us we have free press here in America. No, we don't. We have a more tightly controlled media and press in the U.S. than they do in China, Russia, or anywhere else. I'll say that again. You're like, oh, you're being over the top. No, absolutely. There is zero wavering from the narrative in this supposedly free press. Now, let's say you did have a reporter. You got this, you blow in the whistle. You're a whistleblower. And you go to this reporter. You found one leftover old reporter. And that reporter grabs the scoop and writes up this huge thing that whatever government narrative that's being promoted right now is actually all a lie. And it's full of corruption. And they're actually using this to steal all the money. Where's he going to publish it? He's got an editor. And his editor is going to go, oh! Reject. That's not going anywhere. Is he going to put it up on YouTube? Social media? Sorry, that runs counter. That's disinformation. Remember when they were running around with the whole, everything was Russian disinformation. And it turns out that all that was made up by Hillary Clinton to smear Trump. You know, y'all know how I feel about Trump in today, current year. But I mean, still, the facts are the facts. The truth is truth. It was all lie. I mean, what they were telling was the truth, that this all came from Hillary Clinton's campaign. But they all ran around. The media all walked locked in step and said, no. That's just Russian disinformation. He's actually a Kremlin spy or whatever the hell ridiculous nonsense. And still, so you have people be like, well, they couldn't lie about that. Speaking of disinformation, big news this past week, you know, they put the Ministry of Truth on hold, and Nina, was it Yankowicz, whatever the hell her name is, this ridiculous loon there, you know, she's not going to be the head of it. She's resigned. And people are like, you know, wow, you know, look at this. We raised enough hell and the ministry of truth ain't happening. No, that's not what they said. They said they're putting it on pause. Now, look, most of y'all probably ain't old enough to have a cassette player. If you're my age, you're in your 50s, you had a cassette player. You know, like one of them old black ones that walk around, had one speaker in it, and you had your buttons, and you had, you know, record, play, and you think, see, if you came across one of these and you don't know any better, you'd think you record by hitting the big red record button, but no, you had to hit that and play at the same time. Ka-chunk. You had to hit that at the same time. Anyway, you might be playing your cassette, but you hit pause, the play button stays down. You just pause the cassette. The thing's still running. You can hear it in there. So you just paused. Pause means at some point you got to unpause it. They didn't say they're stopping it. Everybody like, oh, see, we still got some power. They listened to us and they stopped the ministry. No, they said they paused it. That means they're going to hit can resume here at some point in time. Trust me, it ain't going away. They're just going to wait till you're a little more distracted with something else. Maybe monkeypox. They were bringing that up. When you're distracted by enough of something else, they're going to bring that back on. It's just on pause. Don't worry. Nina was probably a mistake. They realize that now. They got to get her out of the picture. She's too unlikable. Even shitlibs don't like that bitch. They don't even like her. They got to find somebody a little less abrasive. Besides the fact that she was working on Ukraine stuff beforehand, you know, it ties things in a little too much. It's coming back. Don't worry. Monkeypox. You start to see this. If you read, they're bringing monkeypox up. Monkeypox. We're going to have another pandemic. Oh, they're just having like some sort of, I don't know, World Health Organization, Bill Gates bullshit a year or so ago, running drills about a monkeypox pandemic. And look, all of a sudden, lo and behold, what do we got? Monkeypox. It's just pure coincidence. But don't worry, I'm sure they wouldn't lie about something that big, would they? Some reporter might blow the whistle, get the big scoop. Monkeypox. We're going to get monkeypox next. Don't worry, though. The pharmaceutical companies, I'm sure they're working on a vaccine even as we speak. And just like these other recent vaccines, they'll be sold for billions of dollars to the government so that you can get them for free. Don't ask what they do. Otherwise, if you question what they do, that's going to be more disinformation. It's got to be shut down. Don't be asking things like, I wonder if this has anything to do with all those bioweapons labs that Russia found in the Ukraine. Don't ask questions like that. It's more disinformation. Yeah, it's more disinformation, deceiving, tricking people. Believe the narrative. Always got to believe the narrative. Monkeypox. Yeah, we're going to get monkeypox, I guess. I don't know. Maybe we're going to get like a hybrid, you know, really dress it up. How far out are we going to go? We're going to get monkeypox COVID hybrid, maybe, huh? Huh? COVID pox. Monkey-id. You see, you're going to get a bad cough and you're going to get welts all over you. Or maybe you start swinging off the ceiling fan going, what's he got? He's got monkey COVID. He's monkey COVID, but don't worry. Pfizer's got a new vaccine coming out with emergency authorization. 6 billion doses bought by the government so you don't have to pay for them because the government really worries about your health. They're really concerned about you. Stupid stuff. Finland and Sweden want to join the NATO. Oh, is that crazy or what? Like, this is like picking a fight that ain't none of your business. Finland ain't having no problems with Russia. It ain't like they've been having disagreements for the past 20 years. They ain't been having no problem. And then all of a sudden, they're going to get off in the middle of this. But yeah, I get it. The U.S. is pressuring, I'm sure. People are being paid off. The usual corruption, bribery, and other bullshit that we have learned is just a fundamental essence of the West. But still, it's just amazing. Because, like, if you had somewhere, you know, by and large, you know, some of y'all may not live, like, where things like that happen. So I'll explain it to you. Like, if you looking and you walk up and like, two people get in a fight in a bar. No, I don't go hang out at bars. I can't say I never have in my youth. If you're in a bar and a fight breaks out, the last thing you do is go off and get in the middle of that. The last thing you do, you just stay away. The person that tries to break it up is always the one that gets hurt the worst. Finland got no, shouldn't have any dog in this fight, much less Sweden. Like, gosh, what a train wreck that country is. It's like, it's not bad enough. We want it worse. Imagine having like good relations with Russia. You understand Russia. If you have any understanding, you understand what the trigger point for Russia, what the red lines are, is this NATO bullshit on the border. You know, I mean, why is it a why is it an issue? Why do they act like it's so unreasonable for Russia not to want enemy military alliance right across their border? I keep picturing like if Mexico was, their government was toppled and Russia put a puppet government in there and then started setting up those missile trucks up and down the Rio Grande, pointed right into the U.S., putting missile silos, doing military exercises right across the Rio Grande. Can you imagine the convulsions of the U.S. government? They wouldn't tolerate. Why do they act like that's an unreasonable thing? And you know, that's Russia's like, we don't want. And then you got Finland like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to join NATO. What are you going to do? I mean, yeah, you went and started bombing Ukraine because they insisted they were going to get in NATO. But no, now what are you going to do? This is an escalation. I said this last week. This is an escalation. It's just stupid. Stupid. And once again, proves that the democracy got nothing to do with representing the people. I don't think the people of Finland were sitting there lobbying their government saying, hey, we really want to get in the middle of this fight. Let's try to join NATO. Let's get our gas and electricity cut off. We don't have enough inflation. We want more. But you see, you don't get under the democracy. You don't get what you want. The government doesn't listen to you. It's part of the freedom. It's, oh, gee. You know, we were talking earlier about this whole, you know, the disinformation, the Ministry of Truth. And how paranoid, you know, how wicked and paranoid and evil do these people got to be that they're that worried that people, can you imagine being that worried about what people say about you? You know, they always talk about these other world leaders, you know, like they're tyrants. They're tyrants. I really don't think Lukashenko sits around and is like, lays awake at night worried about what random people in Belarus or anywhere else think about him. I really don't. I don't think Chairman Z does. I don't think President Putin does. I don't think they lay around worry about what randos think. Yes, they sit around and they're very concerned about foreign funded society. What do I want to say? Foreign funded color revolutions. Foreign-funded instigation of upturning their society. Yeah, they got to worry about that. That's a far cry from what just randos say they don't like what your hair looks like on the internet. I don't think they care. Imagine the mindset. And yet we're told these people are tyrants. They're tyrants. Yes. Lukashenko worries. I bet the guy like polls like at 80, 90%. Everybody likes the guy. But yet he's worried that people hate his guts. He doesn't have to worry. He doesn't have to worry. Putin's polls, always really good. Biden, meanwhile, like, I don't know, he's down there. He's still above Congress. The true champions and defenders of our democracy, the Congress, who always polls like in single digits, along with the media. And yet these are the people constantly moral lecturing to us. Congress and the media, they have like single digit poll numbers. Nobody likes them. And yet they run around and posture like other, there are moral superiors. They have to tell us because we're too stupid. Nobody likes them. It says something that deep downside, they know nobody likes them. You know, Lukashenko, Putin, Chairman Z, they don't have to worry about what people think. Why? Because at the end of the day, they know that they at least have a passing care about how their people's lives are. Oh, really? Look, it's pretty simple. You know, now look, I'm not saying these aren't more on a sliding scale of authoritarianism. You know, I mean, in each country, if you look at the three, say Russia, China, and Belarus, you know, I mean, how much authority the ruler has is kind of on a sliding scale. But, you know, it says something when they're, If you're at least somewhat concerned about doing something for the people to make their lives better, you don't really have to worry about everybody hating your guts. Doesn't it speak volumes that they're that paranoid that people are going to criticize them on the internet? That people are going to criticize what they're doing? Lukashenko doesn't have to worry about that. Chairman Z don't have to worry about that. Why? Because they're actually trying to do things that make their people's lives better. You know, they're actually trying to be concerned about how their people are doing. I'm not saying like that's the number one thing on their priority, but it is at least on the list. Does anybody think how your life is going is anywhere on the list of the U.S. government or any government in the West, for that matter? They don't care. They won't even pretend to care. Well, they pretend to care at election year, I guess. Mostly they just run around and spot slogans. I haven't even, this is supposed to be the midterm elections, and these Congress people, they're only talking about Ukraine. They ain't even talking about you. They don't talk about you. They just talk about Ukraine. You see, just put the crane on the end of it. If your name was, last name was Crane, you might think they're talking about you. They'd be like, hey, Ukraine. But me? Well, these politicians, they're all obsessed with me. They all talking about it. It's kind of lame, I know. It's just stuff that I come up with off the top of my head. People in these countries like Russia, China, Belarus, the leaders of these countries, they don't hate their populations. They might make mistakes. They don't sit around. They might do things. They might do things you don't even like. But they don't have an active hatred for their own populations. At the end of the day, they try to promote a stable society because even if it's selfish, because that's good for them. If they have a stable society and they're doing something right, because they poll around like 80% in their own countries, everybody likes them. And of course, in the West, what do they say? That's not even real. Those polls are fake. But our polls are perfectly legit. Biden got more votes than anybody ever in the history of the world. Only now, what? Just this short time later, he's polling like at 20%, 30%, whatever the hell. My, how times have changed. He's doing such a bang-up job. How are they going to sell the next election? Everybody, he'll go from 20% to 100%. But it's these countries where these leaders pull well among the people, that's the fake stuff. You see, that's more disinformation. It's getting more disinformation there. Everybody actually hates these leaders that, I don't know, try to at least put some policies in place that improve the lives of their people. It's been funny. It's not funny. I don't mean funny, haha. I mean funny, strange. It's not even strange, I guess. It's maybe a better word is it's just perplexing. That's not right. It's an amazing thing. It's a curious thing to watch. They're of course still going on. Unlike the SUV that happened to run over people at a Christmas parade, you know, this Buffalo shooting thing still in the news cycle because they're going to milk it. They're going to milk it for everything they have. With that narrative, you know, they've been on to talking about, you know, see, highlighting the disinformation, you see. They fit everything they can. They got the racism, the white supremacy, the assault rifles. We need to ban more guns. This guy was on the internet. You see, free speech, that's a real problem. You look at how it all just fits together. It's funny because they've been going around talking about this replacement, you know, the great replacement, conspiracy theory. Now, it amazes me because, like, you know, Alex Jones going out and saying, you know, Sandy Hook was a hoax and these were crisis actors. Whether you think that's real or not, you got to say that's a theory. I mean, you don't really know. Not really. I mean, yeah, so you say, well, look at this. But at the end of the day, you just got basically his word against the narrative's word. I leave it up to you who you think's more trustworthy. That's not relevant to the point here. In this case, they try to lump it in. That's the problem with these terms like conspiracy theories. It's used to discredit. You know, like if you question, how did building number 7 just collapse on its own when it never even got hit by an airplane? They lump you in with, so you think the earth is flat. You're all crazy. See, that's the way it works. They lump you in. This is the great replacement. This is a white supremacist, anti-Semitic. And it amazes me they throw that in there. Because, I mean, like, really, if I had no morals, if I had no scruples, they should just pay me to run this stuff for them because they do such a poor job. They don't have very good people doing this, you know? Because I tell you, like, normies are sitting around, you know, they're thinking, well, these Democrats and their great replacement, and these people run to the forefront and say, it's part of an anti-Semitic. So these people are like, what did the Jews have to do with it? Wait, what? Why are you throwing the Jews into the middle of this? What do they have to do with it? It's just really poorly run. The Great Replacement is this horrible anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Pizzagate pedophiles in the government, they lump everything in them. Now, the difference here is that we have all of these videos of themselves saying this. You know, the one that really comes into mind is Joe Biden when he was speaking, talking about in this year, white people of European descent will be the absolute positive minority in America. And that's a good thing. You know, this isn't like somebody just spouting a bunch of nonsense and you know, it's their word against somebody. It's their own words against themselves. Spreading disinformation by quoting them. Here's their speeches where they talk about how great it's going to be when we finally get white people replaced. Now you point that out, it's like, oh, you're promoting the hateful anti-Semitic. I would, and it's like, Joe Biden is not a Jew. Why is this anti-Semitic? You show the videos. You quote they themselves from like, I don't know, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, whenever the hell. You're spreading disinformation. I'm quoting you. Don't believe it. Kick them off. Kick them off the internet. Censor them. We need more censorship. Can't have this disinformation of spreading their actual quotes around. And again, we don't have a free media. They turn everything into partisan politics. Look, if you are an actual journalist, regardless of your politics, you know, regardless of what box you try to check off for your politics, if you are a real journalist, you would look at this and be like, wait, hold up. You yourselves have been talking about that. Now, whether you think it's a good thing, a bad thing, you can debate that. But to say this idea of intentionally replacing white people, when here we have quotes of you yourselves talking about what a great thing that's going to be. Why do you think if they roll Biden out, medicate him up to do a press conference where you saw those pictures here a while back where he had the card, he knew the questions in advance and he had written down what he's supposed to answer. That's how bad it really is. If you only knew how bad things really are. If you had a real media, somebody would be like, well, Mr. President, this many years ago, you said, you know, white people would be an absolute minority and that, you know, people of European descent would be an absolute minority. And that would be a good thing. Could you explain to us why that's going to be a good thing? Why? I mean, if he says it's a good thing, explain to us. Maybe it is a good thing. You know, tell us what's going to be the positive by reducing this number of people and replacing them with this. I mean, what's the good thing here? Tell us what are the benefits going to be? And no, I'm going to press you because I'm a real reporter, if we had such a thing, this ghost figure of a real journalist. I'm going to press you and saying, because diversity is our strength is a slogan. That's not an answer, Mr. President. Tell us specifically in what areas this is going to improve anybody's life. Not just white people, not just black people, not just brown people, not just Asian people, anybody's life. What is the fact that white people are going to be a minority in their own country? How is that going to make things better? Tell us specifically what is wrong now that is going to correct without just using slogans, but we don't have that. We don't have a free press. Ain't nobody going to get the scoop. They can lie about everything. And they do. Yeah. This is another crazy, unhinged conspiracy theory. More disinformation. Got to combat this disinformation of people quoting them and, you know, showing videos of they themselves saying this stuff. It's not real if the media doesn't tell you that it's real. It's a good thing. It's a good thing fixing to get the Christian specifics. I tell you, non-believers, you know, I'm just saying, I feel sorry for you. I don't know how you'll cope with it. I really don't. I mean, at least as Christian believers, we understand these blatant lies. And no, I'm not preaching early, but I'm just going to tell you this. I'm just going to tell you this, and you can ponder on it, or you can discard it. I don't care. When you're given these blatant, like, in-your-face lies that are just offensive because they're so obvious, that feeling you have, you just got this, like, what? That is like a literal satanic spiritual attack on you because they're just, like, spitting in your face with these obvious lies. But nonetheless, like I say, I'm not preaching hardly, but I do understand that's a part of it. It is literally a spiritual attack on you to sit there and just shove these lies in your face over and over, day in, day out. Take it, submit, and nod your head. Bow down, nod your head, and agree that this lie is the truth. Do it. Do it. But we have you saying this. No, no. It's disinformation. Bow down. Accept the lie. Say it's real. Say it's true. Anyway, oh, goodness. It's trying times. It's trying time. They keep escalating this conflict. They're going to try to distract everybody with monkeypox, COVID, or some other bullshit so you don't notice, but it's escalating. This whole Finland, I think it's getting played down. This whole Finland-Sweden joining NATO thing is a huge escalation. It's not being played up very much. It's not being talked about very much. That's a big escalation. They think, I keep saying this, they're arrogant. They think they can keep this contained to being a limited proxy war. And yet at the same time, they keep escalating it. And if you look at how incompetent these people are in every other aspect of what they're running in the government, every other aspect of what they're doing, if you look at that level of obvious incompetence and realize it's the same people. It's the same people that think they're going to contain this conflict with Russia into a proxy conflict. These are the same people that think it's a good idea to essentially be starting a two-front conflict with Russia and China. And this is somehow going to work out well because they're so smart. They're so clever. They're such smart boys. They're going to be able to keep this contained, you see, because they got a degree in something somewhere. It's a serious escalation. And they're going to keep everybody distracted with monkeypox, monkey COVID, or whatever the hell they decide to come up with. All the while, this fire is growing. It's not getting smaller. And who knows how this ride ends. Anyway, we need to get into the Christian-specific segment, the sermon, if you would. I know. You know, like I say, hopefully you'll stick around for that. Hopefully you do. If not, then so be it. You've been fairly warned, at least. If you don't want to hear it, you don't have to stay around for it. But for the rest of you, as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So as we get into this week's Christian-specific segment, hopefully everybody stayed around for it. I think it'll be good. I always think it'll be good every week. We're going back to the listener supporter mailbag. Dear Grandpa Dan, I hope this finds you well. So I wanted to ask you about what you talked about the other day concerning free will. I do believe that you said we have free will to do what we want, but do we have free will to choose Jesus? So in reading John 15, verse 16, it says, ye have not chosen me, but I've chosen you and ordained you that ye should go and forth and bring fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you. Also wanted to ask you about what you think about the parable of the wheat and the tares. Some people seem to think a wheat can become a tare and a tare can become a wheat. Love your shows. Keep up the great work. Stay strong. I'm praying for you, Debbie, and that is very much appreciated. I appreciate the prayers. Appreciate the support. And appreciate the question. I really do. I always love the listener supporter mailbag, and I say that, and people might think I don't really mean it, but I really do. And I really love, like, the input. And especially the input when it comes to the Christian specific segment, because I mean, if y'all got questions on this stuff, I this is what I'm here for, here to answer it. I'm not, you know, puffing myself up like I'm an expert. I shall answer all your questions. It's not like that. If I have the answers, I'll be glad to share them with you. If not, I'll try to figure it out with you. It's kind of what we do here. We have these discussions and we try to figure this stuff out together. So, I mean, it's great. If y'all have a question about this stuff, I'm always glad. This week, I think we can get into the answer. I think I'm pretty confident that we can nail this down. Hopefully, when we're done, this will be clearer for all of you. So you talked about John 15, verse 16. As always, I like to back up a little bit. Let's get a little more context here to understand. Is Jesus saying, he's going to pick you. He's going to pick you to be saved. You're not going to pick him. You're going to choose him to be saved. We want to back up. We're going to stay, obviously, in chapter 15. We're not going to back up that far. Don't worry. I'm going to bore you all to death with a bunch of Bible reading. But I do want to back up to verse 8. All of this is Jesus speaking here. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. Continue in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I'm biting my tongue to keep from stopping and going off on each verse here. I could just keep going off. Let's see here. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you, that ye should go forth and bring fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you. As I said, I could have stopped after each verse and just expounded on it, but I didn't want to do that because I wanted to kind of get to the point. You're probably going to want to go back and read 8 through 16 again after we discuss this, and I think you'll spot the pattern here. It's clear that Jesus is speaking specifically to his disciples, to his 12 disciples. I chose you 12 guys. You're my dudes. You think you chose to follow me, but actually I chose you from the beginning. It's going to be this guy. It's going to be this guy. It's going to be this guy. Now that's interesting, because if such is the case, and obviously it is, then that means Jesus chose Judas as well, the traitor. He chose Judas the traitor to be a part of his group as well, knowing full well that he was going to be the traitor because he was chosen for that role. You see, that's very interesting to me because, you know, we always act like, I don't know, I think sometimes it gets tempting to think like Judas, like, you know, weaseled his way in there somewhere and like under the radar, you know, slipped in there and betrayed Jesus. But, you know, it says elsewhere in the Bible that, you know, some are created for noble purposes, some for ignoble. If somebody is created for the purpose of destruction, who are you to question the potter who makes the clay? Judas was chosen for the role of destruction. He was chosen to be one of the disciples to fill the role as a traitor so that the Lord's will would take place. But Jesus is speaking to the disciples specifically here. If you think about when Jesus sent the 12 out, he sent them out on a mission. Remember that. And he told them, don't take a purse. Don't take any money. Don't worry about taking food. Don't worry about taking extra clothes. Everything will be provided. This is going to show you so that you understand you can go forth and do the miracles and the things I'm going to have for you to do in the future. You can look back on this and say, well, he told us to go do this. We didn't even take food or money, and everything was provided for us. God provided it. And that happened. They went out completely unprepared and did the things he told them to do. They didn't starve to death. They didn't go without. They were blessed. The Lord literally provided their needs as they went, and this strengthened their faith so that fast forward to the future, they were able to carry out the work of the Lord under great persecution. It was like a training session for them. Now, when Jesus told them, go out, don't worry about taking money, don't worry about taking extra clothes, food, everything will be provided. Those were specific instructions for them. I mean, I love the Lord, and hopefully you love the Lord too, but I'm going to tell you, if you go out into the world without any sort of preparation, no money, no food, you're just going to be like, well, God will bring me something to eat tomorrow. You might starve to death. You know, it's not that the Lord is a liar, heaven forbid. Those were instructions at that time for those guys, for that mission. And here, when he talks about, you didn't choose me, I chose you, he's telling the disciples that. And again, I encourage y'all to go back and read what we just read, 8 through 16, with that in mind. And you'll see that in each verse, pretty much, you can see where he's referencing. You know, I have spoken everything to you. I've spoken everything to you. You know, he's talking about the discussions they had when no one else was around. I've told you all of these things. I've shared all of this with you. This is specific. This is specific to these guys. Now, quite honestly, I'm surprised I haven't gotten more feedback and questions concerning concerning the free will, because I honestly expected that maybe I did such an amazing job that everybody's questions were answered. Seriously, I'm humble, believe it or not. And I seriously doubt that. The free will thing gets so confusing. And this is one of the things that is difficult to grasp and understand. And it can be something to struggle with. Because as I said, when we had that discussion, this is really where the concept of time as we know it, temporal realm that we're in, and the concept of eternity kind of comes together, and it can get kind of, I don't know, mixed up. A good way to understand it is, like I said, then, just because God knows where you're going to be, where you're going to wind up, doesn't mean that he's manipulating you to be there. You know, I mean, I guess he could, but ultimately, even if he did that, you would be deciding along the way. He might give you, you know, you might be met with a choice, and you still have to make the choice. He doesn't make the choices for you. Why? Because you have free will. Now, if he wants you to be there, he might present those questions to you, or he may not. It might just be life. I think a good way to think about, imagine if you had a friend. And you were thinking, wow, you know, I'm fixing to move to Atlanta. I'm just grabbing a random city. And you're thinking, well, I'm going to miss my friend. But you also had a time machine, and you got in your time machine, and you went forward 2 years to see how you were doing in Atlanta. And you went 2 years into the future, into Atlanta. And you saw that your friend was actually there. He was living in Atlanta. He was, I don't know, selling used cars or whatever. And you took great heart in this, and you said, hey, my friend is going to be here. I was worried because I'm moving. I'm leaving my friend behind. But I used my time machine. This is silly, I realize, but I'm kind of trying to make a point. Bear with me. Probably not doing it real well. And you went in your time machine. You saw that your friend was there. And then you go whoop, back to the present. And now you're packing up your stuff, and your friend's saying his goodbyes. And your friend's like, man, you know, I'm going to miss you, homie. And you're like, you know, hey, I'll see you in the future. I see you in Atlanta. And your friends be like, yeah, you're mine. I'm never moving to that place. I don't even know what you're talking about. You see me in Atlanta. I'm probably never even going to come visit you. And you'll be like, yeah, okay, whatever you say. And you go on with your deal because you know you already went ahead and you saw the future. You don't understand how he got there. You didn't manipulate him into moving to Atlanta and selling used cars, but you went through your time machine. You saw that, oh, there he is. How he got from present day to in the future, living in Atlanta, selling used cars. You don't know. You didn't have anything to do with that, but you do know he is going to wind up there because you went in the future and you saw it. I don't know if that's the best illustration, but it's like that. God sees all of it laid out. The past, the present, the future. He sees where it all winds up. You know, we have to make our decisions. We have our free will to make our decisions. But just because he sees where we're going to be doesn't mean he's making those choices for us. We have the free will. He could play the active role of presenting us the choices, but it is our choices to make. And thank goodness it is. I mean, it's really something to be thankful for. People get angry about it sometimes, like, well, God shouldn't, you know, that they just want to be robots. They don't want to take any responsibility for their own life and their own choices. They want God to, like, they want to, they're basically asking God. The people who reject this and say it's a negative thing, most of them do so out of ignorance. They don't understand what that would mean. It's saying, like, basically, I want to be an NPC. I want to live my life with no decision making, no capability to think on my own, and no ability to learn or grow, and so on and so forth. Anyway, to the second part, wanting to ask about the parable of the wheat and tares, one of my favorite parables, by the way. Some people seem to think a wheat can become a tare, and a tare can become a wheat. And I'm not going to go read that particular parable again. I think everybody's pretty much familiar with it. Jesus says clearly that an enemy did that. His servant, the masters, in the parable, the landowner's servants are like, did you sow bad grain? Did you? And he's like, no, an enemy did this. This is interesting because what it says is when you look at the tares are people of the devil. And the, you know, to use the parable of what's being illustrated. So that tells you there are people in this world who are just simply, they're children of the devil. They are spawn of Satan. They belong to him wholeheartedly. This is something most people really do. They really struggle with this. Whenever you hear somebody said, we're all children of God, that's a lie. I'm sorry. When they say all, every human being on the face of the earth, they're all children of God. That is a lie because it's pointed out here that when the servants ask the landowner in the parable, did you sow bad seed? They're asking, did you plant all of this? Because if you did, you planted some bad ones in there. And he's like, no, an enemy did that. We planted good seed, but then the enemy came along and put his tares in there. You know, no, I didn't do this. So this notion that we're all, quote unquote, we're all children of God is a lie. We're not all children of God. Jesus pretty much illustrates that quite clearly with this parable. And because of this, you know, everybody's children of God thing, you're exactly right. You get people that have this notion that wheat can become tares and tares can become wheat. The tares are never going to be wheat. Why do you think he warned against casting your pearls before swine? Don't waste your time on tares. They're never going to be wheat. They're always going to be a weed. They're children of the devil. If you run into somebody that's a children of the, that's a child of the devil, they're always going to be a child of the devil. There's nothing you're ever going to do that's going to change that. There are people who are just fundamentally wicked. They just are. I mean, there's, you know, people try to rationalize it. It's like, well, it's because they had a bad childhood, or it's because of this, or it's because of, no, they are just fundamentally, they're doing the work of their father. They can't help it. They're children of the devil. There's nothing you can do about that. Now, the problem is you get people that are confused. You get wheat that's out there. You get one strand of wheat out there and they're surrounded by tares. And that wheat starts becoming convinced that they're tares too. And they start acting like the tares around them. That's when, if you're talking about, you know, reaching people and with the gospel and bringing them to Jesus, that's what you're doing. They're supposed to be wheat. They think they're tares. And ultimately, if they insist they're tares through their entire life and follow the way of the tare and live the life of the tare, they're going to get the fate of the tare and they're going to be cast into the oven and be cast into the fire. You're convincing wheat that you're trying to make wheat that has convinced itself that it's a tare understand and know you're wheat. But you ain't running around trying to convince a tare you can be a wheat too. Look, you just try hard enough, you're going to sprout grain on top of your head. No, they can't. They're tares. That's all they're ever going to be. They're just tares. Also, you got to be on guard for tares that are masquerading as wheat. You know, there'll be a nice group of wheat and you got a couple of tares. It don't take many. You got a nice concentrated group of wheat in this field, and you got like two tares that have come up right in the middle, and they're over there. They're like, "Hello, my fellow wheat." You know, I mean, they're trying to convince you that they're wheat too. And but inevitably, what do? They don't just go in there and imitate the wheat. I mean, they do that to a certain extent, but ultimately, a tare is going to be a tare, and they're going to start trying to what? They cause division. They start turning one wheat against another wheat. They start saying, well, do we really need to do things quite like that? That doesn't seem right. Doesn't seem right to y'all. They're always, you can spot them. You might have a good, harmonious church. You may say if God has blessed you with a good IRL church, that's a wonderful thing. And you might have this, like, everybody gets along. Everything's going smooth. Everything's going great. You'll spot them tares. When they slip in amongst you, they show up and they're like, we love your church. Man, this is great. I love this place. Wow, I finally found a church home. And you're like, well, good. Welcome. You know, it's all cool. And then like in a month, it never takes them long. In a month, they're like wheedling their way in. And they're over here talking to somebody be like, so y'all really do things that way? That, wow. Because like all the other churches, that should be your clue. All the other churches, they've been hopping from one to another. All the other churches I've been to, nobody did it that way. I mean, I'm not saying anything. I'm new around here, you know, but I'm just saying there's a lot better way to do it than what y'all are doing it. And oh, really, well, you know, and next thing you know, your little harmonious church where everybody got along and everybody just celebrated and loved the Lord and were glad to get together and have fellowship. All of a sudden, now you got all these problems. Now you got people forming committees and people backstabbing each other. Wheat is really easily misled. I don't understand why, but by and large, wheat is easily misled. You get a couple tares in there. Now everybody's in there backstabbing each other. You got people getting mad and quitting the church, and you got all this problem. And sometimes if it metastasizes long enough, the church is destroyed. You go by and there's a church and it's all closed down. With a for sale sign in the front. That church is gone. We just took a couple tears. It was easy. Just a couple tears. That's all it took. Now you may be thinking, well, how do I know? I mean, I can't. Maybe somebody's just new with the faith and they still got, you know, bad habits or whatever. Jesus told you. By your fruits, by their fruits, you'll know them. Just watch what they do. Just watch what they do. In our verses we just read a few minutes ago, that's why I kind of encouraged y'all to go back and read 8 through 16 again. What's he specifying? What's he specifically saying to do? You know, keep taking this action. Keep following what I have told you to do. Action. By their fruits you will know them. Just watch what they do. When somebody comes in your IRL church, like we just talked about, just watch. When you see them start going around quietly talking over here about, oh yeah, you know, and you listen to their words, you can tell by what they're doing. By their fruits, you'll know them. Watch them. Just see what they do. You'll know pretty soon. I mean, there's a difference between people who are purposely coming in and sowing discord and sowing conflict, and somebody who just comes in and kind of, you know, they don't really know how things go and they've got bad habits and they're trying to just now they're new at trying to break away from their sinful ways and they're screwing it up. That's a whole different sort of thing. Anyway, I appreciate it. Hopefully that answered your question. That was very good questions. Do appreciate it. And just keep at it. It's all about learning and growing. We're going to get into that too as we keep on trucking here. I think as we continue, this may all tie together. We're going to switch gears. We're going to jump over here to the book of Galatians as Paul writing to the Galatians. And I'm kind of going into this with a little lack of context because I don't want to sit here and just read and drone on and put everybody to sleep. We're going to look at chapter 4. We're just going to do verses 1-5, but I encourage you to read like everything kind of leading up to this, because the whole theme here is the Galatians received the joy of the gospel. They went through everything and receiving the Holy Spirit and all this. But then as soon as Paul left, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. And we see this pattern in the early church. So Paul would go around and preach to these people and they received the joy, but he had to keep moving. Like these people received the Spirit. He put people in charge, be like, okay, y'all keep going now. I got to go to the next town. Spread the gospel. I can't just hang out here with y'all. God's keeping me moving. And like, as soon as he's gone, you would have these weeds come in, the tares. I'm keeping that going. The tares would come in, just a couple, and they'd start leading the people astray. Now, the Galatians had gotten led in to start thinking, well, we have to start following all the laws and the rules and the customs of the elders. Otherwise, we're somehow not saved. And they'd gotten tripped up like this. And the whole thing is he's rebuking them for this. Like, look, did we come in? Y'all didn't know nothing. We came in, preached the gospel, told you this is what you got to do. By faith, you got to live by faith, you got to do these things. And y'all said, yes, yes, you understand, you accept this. And as soon as we leave, you got these other people saying, well, that's all well and good, but that's just a start. Here's the book of rules you got to follow. And if you're not doing all of those, you're in trouble. One of the big ones is circumcision. All your men got to be circumcised. That was a big thing. Well, these guys are uncircumcised. Your foreskin is going to keep you from going to the kingdom of God. And Paul's just like tearing his hair out. I just see him. He's just tearing his hair out. He's like, look, I told you none of that matters. You're not bound by the law. And again, I'm not reading all that. I'd have to read the whole thing to give you the context. We don't want to do that. We're just going to do Galatians 4, 1-5. Now I say that the heir, as long as he's a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the Father. Even so, we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. I like the illustration he uses there. Somebody's set to inherit. The heir is no different than the servants because he's a kid. He can't run the estate. He isn't ready for that. He's now, you think of this in the context of all of humanity. The law is not irrelevant. The law is relevant in that people had to understand the framework they're operating in. What is a lie? What constitutes sin? What constitutes, you know, not sin? What are the rules? What are the laws? How does all of this fit together? They had to at least understand the framework that they're working within. Now, understand, and this is something else people, I think, tend to get all mixed up. When you go through, like, Old Testament, quote-unquote, law, there's a whole lot there. There's a whole lot there. Like, you'll say, people say, well, there's this huge contradiction. Why? Because Jesus said turn the other cheek, but the Old Testament says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You say the Bible just full of contradiction. No. Much of the Old Testament law is set up, this is how you govern a nation, you know? These are some of the rules. These are a bunch of the rules and laws that are set. This is how you govern a nation. It didn't really concern how you live your personal life so much unless you broke the law. Literally, like, you broke the law. You were a criminal because you broke the law. In Old Testament days, if you went and murdered your neighbor and stole his flocks, you were a criminal, same as if you did that today. If you broke the law, this is what happened. So a lot of the Old Testament laws are set up, you know, this is how you govern a nation versus, you know, micromanaging your personal life. But as far as the laws, as far as, okay, the framework you're operating in, what constitutes sin? You know, again, you look at the rules and stuff, this is sinful, this is, so people would understand what sin is. Now, with the illustration of the heir being no different than the servants, even though they're going to inherit everything, he's talking about humanity had to understand at least the concept of basic right and wrong, what constitutes sin and whatnot, before they were ready for the next step of heirship, of inheriting through Christ Jesus for Christian believers, the estate, inheriting and being the true children of God. You have to at least take baby steps. You got to start growing. As humanity had to start growing and understand before they were ready for that. If you didn't outline the concept of what is sin and what isn't, and people were just left to figure it out on their own, and then in the middle of that, you said, oh, by the way, you're all saved in Jesus Christ, what would you get? People would be doing all kinds of crazy stuff, thinking that, oh, well, that's okay. I own everything. I'm an heir. You had to understand the framework. You had to understand the basics. The basics first. Now, you had these people come in. And they started twisting it around. You had the tares work their way in, as they tend to do. And they started twisting things around and started getting them back. And this is important, not because, you know, it's important to understand what they were going through then, but to understand, as I say, probably just about every week here, whether you're talking about the Lord God Almighty or the enemy, Satan, the devil. There's always patterns. I mean, you see the same patterns. You see the same patterns more or less at work. It gets dressed up a different way. Satan has a playbook and he stays in that playbook. He doesn't wander outside. He follows the same patterns over and over again. And he doesn't need to change because it works. Look around you at the world today. It works. Why would he need to change? He don't need to trick you. People are stupid. People just fall for the same shit he's done for since he wound up boxed into the realm of time with it. He just does the same stuff and everybody keeps falling for it. You have these tares work in and they started telling people they were saved by the law. They start trying to get them back under the law. People already understood the framework. Now, again, you're going to have to read some more of this leading up to this in the book of Galatians to kind of understand the context of what is, but I can't do that because y'all all fall asleep and I might put myself to sleep. But people have gotten sucked into back to, if I don't follow the laws, I'm not saved. It's just sucking them right back into that. Going back, if we go back to Paul's illustration of the heir, when he's a kid, he can't handle it. So you wind up, he's surrounded by servants and tutors and people who are actually running things for him until he's old enough. Now, imagine he becomes old enough, he inherits it, but those people do a power play and try to convince him, no, you can't do that. You need to let me keep running things. You're going to let me keep running things and doing stuff. See, they try to suck you back in under the law. Instead of your salvation through Christ, it's basically trying to convince people. They're trying to convince people to become a slave, you know, instead of embracing their freedom through Christ. Now things are worse. Well, it's the same pattern. It's dressed up a little different. Now in much of these churches that we look around here today, they've even gone so far as to convince people that they're not chosen to be heirs through Christ by faith at all. They're not there at all. You see, it's the Jews. They're the ones that God has chosen. They're God's chosen people. This really pisses me off. Not because I sit here and harbor some kind of horrible anti-Semitism. It pisses me off because people are, when they do that, are literally rejecting salvation in Christ. It's the same pattern here of, oh, get yourself back under the law, only worse. Because in both cases, you're rejecting Christ as the means of your salvation. In those days, in the early church, they were being convinced that, no, your salvation actually comes from following the list of rules, not through Christ Jesus. who, by the way, if you're following Christ Jesus, you're going to stay within the book of rules naturally because you're striving to be as Christ-like in your entire life as you can. The rules take care of themselves because you're not out here doing a bunch of disgusting, sinful wickedness because you're trying to be closer to Christ every day. Then they would say, oh, well, you're not really saved through Christ. You got to be saved by the law somehow, even though it wasn't capable of doing that up to then. But somehow now it is. It's even worse now. You're not really. I mean, yes, you have Jesus. You got preachers in big old huge mega churches that make more money than I can ever imagine. Their offering plates are full. You got preachers stand up there on TV and they got mega churches. They're up there basically telling the congregation, listen to these people. They basically are telling their congregation to renounce their sonship in Christ because it actually belongs to these other people. You see, you're kind of maybe might get allowed in because of Jesus, but really at the end of the day, God's chosen people are these Jews. It's them. It's not, but it's the same thing. Trying to convince the church, trying to convince believers, trying to convince the wheat that they're actually tares. Trying to convince the people to renounce that they're not really saved. They're not really saved through Christ Jesus. It actually, that salvation and that promise actually belongs to these people over here. Just because they exist. Not because of anything they're doing. Not because of anything that they're promoting. Just because they exist. They exist. And actually, your inheritance belongs to them over there. A bunch of people you don't even know. It belongs to that group of people just because they were born and exist. It doesn't belong to you through faith in Christ Jesus. You see, it's the same lie. It's just dressed up a little differently. It all comes down to you're not really saved through Jesus Christ. See, Satan can't do anything. He can't do anything about salvation through Jesus. He can't override. He doesn't have that authority. What he can do is try to convince you to renounce it. He can try to convince you to reject it. He can try to convince you, can try to get you to say, no, that's not really for me, whether it's actually through the law or it's actually for those people over there who don't even love Jesus as a whole. It's for them because they were born and exist, and somehow that makes them special and chosen, and it's not me. It's not me. It's them. Same old lie. It's just dressed up a little different, but it's the same pattern. We see that same pattern. When you recognize these patterns, and we need to wrap up. When you come to recognize this pattern, these patterns, it'll be easier to spot when you're being tempted. You're easier to spot when you're dealing with the devil or one of his minions. Whenever you're tempted over something, and at the bottom line, when it comes to your faith, the bottom line is they're trying to convince you that somehow you're not really saved. You thought you had that salvation through Jesus Christ and faith in him and striving to understand and draw closer to him. And he draws closer to you, which we're probably going to get into that in a future sermon, really get, bear down on what that means. But we don't have time today as you live your life. But you get these people that come along. You're going to know you're being tempted. You're going to know you're dealing with Satan when they come up and they're like, whatever spiel they have. Whatever convincing paper they have written, whatever glorious sounding words they spew forth, at the end of the day, they're trying to convince you you're not really saved. You better not believe that. Now, believe that. You got to follow those rules. You got to follow the law. You got to get back under the law. Actually, all of that salvation stuff, all of that promise stuff, that was for this group of people over here just because they exist. It's not really for you. It all comes down to the idea of getting you to reject your salvation as promised through Jesus Christ. To throw it away. He can't snatch it from you. He cannot steal it from you. He's not capable of it. You're like, when it comes to that, you're like an impenetrable fortress as long as you hold to the faith. He can't steal it away from you. He doesn't have the power. Jesus said he cannot snatch one single one from my hand. He doesn't have the ability to do that. But he sure as hell has the ability to convince you to throw it away yourself, and he will do it, and he's a slick talker, and he will talk you into it, and your whole world, you get people in the proclaim themselves to be religious authorities, and they're in these high positions, and at the end of the day, you listen to them, and they'll be trying to convince you that isn't really for you. You got to get back under the law. You got to do this. You got to do this. It's actually for those people over there, you see, because God really meant it for them. Even though they hate Jesus, it's actually for them from Jesus. Again, I'm talking in group-like terms. I'm talking in broad terms. The point is, he always will try to convince you to cast it away. And sadly, it works on a lot of people. He will convince you to give up on it. He will convince you to renounce your faith. He will try to convince you to do it yourself because he can't do it. He can't steal it away from you. But he sure as heck can convince you to throw it away. We got to wrap up, folks. I hope you got something out of it. Always enjoy the discussion. Always enjoy the listener supporter mailbag. And of course, I very do much appreciate when we pass around the plate here. If you can put something in there, it is very much appreciated. Every little bit helps. Trust me. It's rough. Throughout the fight here. So yeah, I really do appreciate it. But like I said, we do got to wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the show. I do come on Fridays with Sven Longshanks for the Daily National. Also keep your eye out. We usually have round tables getting more regular here, and I'm glad. I always enjoy sitting around with Sven and Dr. Johnson. Always a good time. A lot of fun. So always keep your eye out for those shows. And of course, don't forget, we're always back here every Tuesday for the Parish of the Patriots.